When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
On a day where the Seahawks signed yet another free agent, this one to compete at one of the open guard spots, the question among Seahawks fans remains, what's going on with that interior offensive line for the Seahawks? Is it a draft priority? Will there be bigger name signings? What are they going to do? It's what has a lot of you the most nervous about the work left to be done this offseason. Well, today we're going to talk about it with Sanjit T., college football scout and runner of the YouTube channel, The Football Scout. He specializes in offensive line play, does a great job breaking that stuff down. You've seen him on the show before. He joins me again today to talk about what's going on with that Seahawks offensive line, what the upside might be, and where they might be able to turn in the draft for help. That's coming up next on Seahawks Forever.
Welcome to the Seahawks Forever podcast, in-depth analysis on everything Seahawks. And now, here's your host, Dan Viens.
So usually when we get breaking news, it is after I end a show. Happened with Damian Lewis signing elsewhere last week. There are other examples. Happened again today, although not quite at the end of the process. I had just wrapped up my interview today with Sanjit, and the Seahawks sent out an announcement that they have signed a guard, which, oddly enough, is what we're talking about today. Tremaine Antrim. He's been a backup guard for the LA Rams after being a seventh-round draft pick of theirs 3 years ago. 6'2", 314, played at Clemson, played some tackle and guard for them. Says he was sold on the opportunity to come here and compete. And that he describes himself as tough, physical, smart. Sounds like a Seahawk, right? A guy who loves ball. I'm versatile and I try to be useful anywhere I can. So another name to add to the competition at interior offensive line may signal that there aren't any bigger moves to come. There isn't a lot of salary cap space left. Not sure how it affects the comp pick formula. Currently, the Seahawks stand to gain 3 comp picks in next year's draft. I would assume that his contract is more of the minimum variety, which may not be enough to bump any of their comp picks out of the formula. As we learn more about that, we'll get into that. But let's talk about the rest of the group and some of the guys he's going to be competing with and could potentially compete with coming up in the draft. My conversation earlier today with Sanjit T. Welcome back to the show again, Sanjit. I know that this is a busy time of year for you. Pleasure to have you.
Absolutely, man. I really, really appreciate you having me.
So you run the Football Scout YouTube page. If you guys haven't checked that channel out, definitely go do it because you cover a lot of ground. Your background a little bit, you started out focusing on the Raiders. We're going to touch on that in a second. And then the channel started to grow, and so you expanded your scope. But what I love to do with you in particular is your first love and kind of the area you've told me is mostly your wheelhouse is offensive line. And with where the Seahawks sit today, with what they've done in free agency, it's funny, a week ago today, the fan base was freaking out because nothing was happening. And then they filled some needs throughout the week, but it's offensive line that people are still talking about today. What are we going to do at guard? What's Abraham Lucas? There's a lot of questions that haven't been answered yet. And so I wanted to bring you on and kind of address some of those. I want to start with what they have, what we know about the Seahawks offensive line. And I had you on the show last year and you spoke very highly of the unit as a whole. You thought it could be a top 10 unit in the league. There were injuries. Things didn't work out that way. But let's start with the known factors. We'll work from the left to the right. Charles Cross had an outstanding rookie year, the number 9 pick in the draft 2 years ago. You're very high on him. Most people, he was banged up early in the year and maybe that was a contributing factor. Most people seem to think he regressed a little bit last year. He didn't take that step forward. What have you seen from Charles Cross in his development?
Yeah, he definitely took a step back. I shouldn't use the words he took a step back. You see a rookie for the first time play in the NFL, and he has you know, 1,000 snaps, you see him winning 850 snaps, right? You're going to say this guy looks good, right? Yeah. Coming into year two, he can probably get a little bit better. He loses a little bit less snaps. You know, he definitely got better in certain areas. I think he has some issues that he has to fix. One of them, I think he will fix as he just continues to play, continues to take snaps. One of the things I noticed with Charles Cross is he struggles to consistently anchor down in pass pro. Teams have, you know, widened their defensive ends when they pass rush against him. They put him out in space. From a footwork perspective, it's not great. But these are coachable things. He can get stronger, so he can develop the ability to consistently anchor. There's other things that an offensive line coach can come in and teach him in terms of using his hands. I think Charles Cross will be okay as he kind of goes forward. A guy that comes to mind for me, two guys specifically. One is the Raiders left tackle, Quentin Miller, who really, really, really struggled in his first three seasons. Mm-hmm. He was bad, but you saw the flashes on tape. And now Quentin Miller, I would say, is the top 10 left tackle. You have other examples. Andrew Thomas just got one of the highest paid contracts prior to the start of this past season. He struggled a lot in his first couple of seasons. I think Charles Cross is probably on that same trajectory. You know, he's year two tackle coming in his rookie season. He started right away. It's hard. It's one of the hardest positions to play in the NFL. I think Charles Cross will be okay. He just has to continue to get stronger, continue to take snaps, and just continue to fine tune the technique.
I wonder too, you know, toe injuries can be a tricky thing. And I remember specifically, I think it was the Titans game at Tennessee, and he just got absolutely beat off the snap. I think it was Harold Landry. I could be wrong there. It might've been their other edge. And just straight path to Geno and didn't even have a chance. And to me, that just looked like a guy that just didn't have that confidence in his toe to really push into it and get off.
Yeah, he has to get healthy. 100% has to get healthy. Last season, he missed the first couple of weeks to start the season last season. Got to get healthy, right? Obviously, that's going to be a big part of it. But I think as he kind of goes forward, just has to develop the technique. You said against the Titans, that was actually one of the tapes that I watched. I actually just watched his tape. As you sent me what we're going to talk about for this video, I went back and I watched some of the games that he struggled. And that game specifically was one of the games that he struggled.
Yeah,
I believe it was Arden Key. Don't quote me on that. I believe that's who it was. Mm-hmm. You know, they lined him up a little bit further outside. They made him go out towards Key. They put him out there on an island, and he had some losing reps. He also went up against some of the other defensive ends, had some losing reps. That was definitely one of his bad games from this past season. Again, it's just coming back to the fundamentals, right? Just getting better, developing, and kind of just coming out there and having success. I do think that he does lean a little bit. And again, I think that kind of comes back to the power aspect of it, right? Really just develop, get stronger, learn to properly anchor down. One of the things that happens when guys aren't able to consistently anchor is they start leaning into it a little bit. Mm-hmm. So when you start leaning into it, guys kind of dip past you, or they'll kind of toss you to the side and you'll get caught leaning forward.
Yeah.
All right, so that was one of the things that I saw in his tape that I think he will be able to correct as we go forward. I would not give up on Charles Cross at all yet. So.
And then the knock on him coming out of school, obviously coming from a Mike Leach air raid type scheme was, you know, needs to grow as a run blocker. Have you seen some steps forward in that area?
Yeah, definitely. I think he's a pretty good run blocker. Again, he does have issues, I would say, with like reach blocks and stuff like that. But he looks good. Right. And one of the interesting things is, I think, as we kind of go forward, that we're going to see this season specifically will be that, you know, I was a massive fan of Damian Lewis and I still am. Right. I know Seahawks fans may not feel the same way. But as you guys know, he got a pretty nice contract to go play for the Panthers. So you're going to have to replace that left guard. So now we're going to see a new left guard coming in playing next to Cross. I think we're going to see a little bit more in terms of, you know, if he is not that good of a run blocker, we're going to see that a little bit more now. Depending on who ultimately ends up filling that left guard role. We're going to talk about that.
Too. We're going to get to the guards. We'll start on the outsides. We'll work in, but I was absolutely going to give you props for being on the Damian Lewis train last year. And partially because of that, when this free agency period started, I was telling Seahawk fans, hey, look, guys that are coming off their rookie contract that were full-time starters, durable, whether you think they were a great player or not, they're going to get paid. And I think a lot of Seahawks fans were hoping he'd come back for pennies on the dollar. And that just wasn't going to happen.
I honestly think Damon got less than what he could have possibly gotten. Robert Hunt of the Dolphins, who also ended up with the Panthers as well, got $20 million a year, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
I believe the Jags paid Cleveland $17 million.
Right.
Cleveland is nowhere near Damian Lewis, so I think the Panthers got to steal Damian Lewis.
So let's go to the other tackle, because this is where the big question marks are. I know that you, as high as you were on Cross and Lewis, you thought Abraham Lucas had a chance to be a top five tackle in the league, one of the elite players in the league. Yep. The knee injury was a mystery all season long. It continues to be a mystery. We know he's had a procedure. We don't know what that is. They go and sign George Fant, who we're going to talk about in a little bit. But I wanted to ask you this because I had to do some digging. A lot of people have speculated that maybe the plan for Lucas is give him as much time as he needs to get back to 100% if he can, because there's some speculation this could be a degenerative chronic knee injury. That maybe moving him inside could take advantage of some of his strengths, especially in the run game and his physicality, and maybe protect him a little bit more. But I thought, well, he never played guard, right? He played right tackle exclusively at Washington State. But I did some digging. I went back to Lance Zierlein's NFL draft profile on, when he went through the combine, the whole draft process on NFL.com. He speculated that his skills would fit as a guard. And then he quoted an anonymous AFC scout who said, he thinks he has a chance to be something, but probably at guard. So there has been some of that thought. Do you see his tool belt fitting if he's healthy, if they're thinking about moving him inside?
I think he'd be a better tackle than a guard.
Okay.
He's 6'6".
Yeah.
And not saying a guard can't be 6'6", but a lot of the guys that these guards are gonna be blocking are gonna be like 6'2", 340 nose guards, or 6'2.5" D tackles that are going to pass rush. Yeah. When you're 6'6" and you're long and lengthy, and I wouldn't say Lucas from a body type perspective is anywhere near someone like Anthony Bradford or Damian Lewis, who are much stronger. Mm-hmm. Those are true guards. Those are guys that are built to be a guard. Of course he can play guard, right? I don't think there's any question about can he do it, but I do think he would struggle from a power aspect when you get some of those stronger defensive tackles on him. I think one of the benefits that Lucas kind of has is he is so quick. He jumps out of his snaps super well. He time snaps. He gets out in space, uses his hands well. Independent hands, I think, is a big part of what makes him good. And the thing is when you're on the inside, you lose that a little bit, mm-hmm. right? Because you're not going to be able to use your hands the same way against a defensive tackle who's stronger then you will a defensive end who oftentimes is going to be weaker. They're going to be a little bit smaller, so your hands can impact them a little bit more. I think Lucas, the best case scenario is he does get healthy and you keep him at right tackle. Now, the George Fant signing is definitely interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't really know what to make of it when I saw the contract numbers, especially. To me, that's you can say, okay, maybe he's a swing tackle. You've had both tackles that kind of have been hurt over the past season. So it makes sense that you really want to make sure your backup tackle can play, especially with the loss of the other tackle that could have possibly came in with, is it Colin? Colin? Is that
Jake Curran? Yeah. Yeah.
So to me, maybe the Seahawks really want to get that tackle. And best case scenario, if Lucas isn't good to go, maybe he just jumps in and starts. All right. But I was a little concerned when I saw that signing because I said, that's a lot of money to give a backup, And Fant's a massive – he's massive. He's not built to play guard. I mean, he could play guard, but he's tall. He's lengthy. He has
– played a couple of snaps, I think, at guard in an emergency last year in Houston.
Right. But, if the question is do I think – Fant can come in and be a good starting right tackle? Absolutely. He's already shown us last season to play. He's a good football player. Long term, obviously, I don't think he's the long term option.
Right.
Even from his age, I believe he is. He's going to be 32 soon.
Right.
So he's not the long term solution, regardless. But if it's a 1 year, he kind of allows Lucas to get healthy. I think that can make sense.
And that's the way the contract's structured. You know, most of it's right. buried into next year. And I will say this for anyone concerned about George Fant's age, you mentioned Jake Curran, but to me, the guy that he is essentially replacing on the roster is Jason Peters. So right. you did get 10 years younger at that spot
to get
George Fant
that's a good point.
In there. Now let's move inside. And I want to start here, and then we're going to finish at left guard, and then we're going to talk about the draft. Because left guard's the one that looks to most people like the black hole right now, where Lewis vacated. So we'll finish there. But when I go through discussions with fans and talk to people on the show and do mock drafts, most fans want to see wholesale additions at center and both guards. They don't believe in Olu Oluwatimi, or they've forgotten about him, and they don't believe in Anthony Bradford, who started 10 games last year, I think, because once again, Phil Haynes got hurt.
Right.
Tell us about Anthony Bradford and Olu Oluwatimi and your feelings on them, because personally, I'm penciling those two guys in as starters.
Yeah. So, you know, in the 2022 season, I watched every single Seahawks game, specifically focused in on the offensive line. One thing I was sure about was that Damian Lewis is one of the better guards in the NFL. Watching him in 2023, he proved it. He was one of the better guards in the NFL.
Yeah.
One of the things I'm very sure about have watched pretty much every single snap of the offensive line from the last two seasons. Specifically last year, we actually saw Olu Oluwatimi come in and he actually played.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I'm confident in is that guy is a starting caliber center in the NFL. He's a very, very, very good football player. Obviously, he has to develop, right? He's not an all-pro player today. He has to develop. But as a prospect, you know, he's in his second season. He's on a rookie contract. There is no reason why Oluwatimi should not be the starting center this season. Now, I'd be shocked if he hasn't learned enough from the past season to this season in terms of the calls and the protections and all those type of things. I'd be shocked. But if for some reason he's not ready, then I think Nick Harris has to get him ready. Right? I don't think Nick Harris is the guy. I watched his tape. He was with Cleveland this past season. He started as well a little bit. He doesn't look that good. I think he's an okay center if you really wanted to have him play for one season. But Oluwatimi is the future of the Seahawks.
Yeah.
The guy's upside is massive, right? I believe he got the award for being one of the best college centers.
Yeah.
Or maybe he was some sort of word. I can't remember. That was 2 years ago. But he's going to be a really, really good center. What do you think? Like, have you watched his tape? And what do you think about him?
I agree. And I think he's one of those guys that he doesn't have that twitchy, dynamic athleticism, but he has so much experience. And I think he started over 50 games in college and he did win the Remington Award. And he was part of the Joe Moore Award winning offensive line. And, you know, Schneider raved about him and then he got two opportunities to come in and play when Evan Brown was banged up last year. And I thought he accounted for himself well. I think he's one of those kind of guys that you just plug in there and you go with him. And I really have no concerns. And I think the fact that Nick Harris was the signing as presumably the backup, obviously they could draft a center, is telling, because Evan Brown is still out there, still available on the free agent market, didn't cost much last year. There was some thought that he could come back. And, you know, you go out and you sign Nick Harris because of his familiarity with Scott Huff, who's much smaller, more of a Joey Hunt type, who's kind of been on the practice squad for the Seahawks for years. And I think that, to me, signals how much confidence that the Seahawks had in Oluwatimi. Because I think if they weren't confident, you know, they might have made a bigger push to bring Evan Brown back. So, again, to me, he's the starter.
Yeah, I have no doubt in my mind. Oluwatimi is going to be the starting center. We'll see during the preseason as well, right?
Yeah,
sure. Before preseason even hits, we'll know if he's the starter out of camp, right? Unless they say it's an open battle, but we'll see who's taking the first team reps and we'll know who's going to be the starter. The right guard position is a little bit different. I like Anthony Bradford, but I don't like him more than I like Oluwatimi as a center. And just me being honest, you know, when I saw Bradford last season, he actually impressed me more in terms of the expectations I had for him, right? I thought Bradford would take 2 years before, you know, you're going to actually get something out of this guy.
Yeah, that was the thought when they drafted him. Yeah, that he was raw and it would take a bit.
Right, he was raw, right? And last year, you know, he looked pretty good. He played over 300 snaps last year. You know, he played in a ton of games. He looked pretty good. Obviously, he does have to develop, and I think if he's the full-time starting right guard, you're going to get losing reps from him, right? When he lines up across, you know, whoever that defensive tackle is, that is a top seven defensive tackle, he's going to lose, right? He will be the one weakness. If Oluwatimi starts at center, left tackles cross, right tackles Lucas, and then at left guard, let's just say you go out and we'll talk about whoever it is. Yeah. Blessed left guard gets filled via free agency with one of the guys. Your worst offensive lineman will be that right guard spot. But that's every team. Every team has weaknesses across the offensive line, and the hope is that he develops, right? Because if Anthony Bradford can develop, and I think he will, I think he'll be a good guard. I think he'll be, you know, his second year, he's on a rookie contract. You got this year plus two more years after that. I think you let this guy play and you let him start at right guard. Now, you got to keep in mind the left guard position is still wide open. You're going to have to fill that position still. So if you're going to say, hey, let's go get a center, let's go get a right guard, let's go get a left guard, that's unrealistic, right? No GM and coach is like, hey, let's change the entire interior offense.
Right. Yeah, right? That's tricky.
You want some guys to be able to come from last year into this year, have a little bit of consistency with the guys next to them. I think Bradford should get every opportunity to start. Now, one of the things to keep in mind is, will you have good backups in case he struggles, right? Will there be good depth? And I think that's going to be one of the big things going into this season for the Seahawks to factor in.
So there's a name that not a lot of fans are familiar with that might be in that exact mix that you're talking about, a guy that's under the radar, a guy the team likes, and a guy that has had some positive buzz around him and is young. And that's McClendon Curtis, who the Seahawks poached off of the Raiders practice squad early last year. And despite the fact they never needed to use him, carried him on the roster all season long to protect him. And then and then tendered him as an exclusive rights free agent or a restricted free agent this offseason, kind of under the radar, just gave him that tender. He's a guy that when we got him from the Raiders, read a lot of good things about the Raiders, really liked him, didn't want to lose him. We're hoping they could sneak him under the radar. And for the Seahawks to carry him the way they did and then bring him back tells me that the new coaching staff must have endorsed him from his limited time in Oakland or in Las Vegas. Sorry, it's going to take years. I'm sorry. What were you able to see from McClendon Curtis? Is this a kid with some upside?
Yeah, so McClendon Curtis only played 11 snaps in preseason last season. That is all we have of McClendon Curtis. The interesting thing with Curtis that I like is, so he played right tackle at Chattanooga in his final season. He played a little bit of guard, played a little bit of tackle. The year before that, he was the starting right guard, and the starting left guard at Chattanooga was Cole Strange, who ended up being first-round pick for the Patriots for the year before. What's interesting is I remember when I was watching Cole Strange, I kept seeing this other guy flash right on tape. And I was like, let me write this guy's name down. Let me DM him on Twitter and see if he's interested in doing a podcast with me, maybe coming on the channel. Well, he ended up eventually getting to the Raiders, right? And even during the draft process, a lot of people really liked McClendon Curtis. But the guard market had kind of tanked at that point, right? So we didn't see a lot of guards even really get drafted, you know, as high as you would have maybe expected guys to.
Yeah.
McClendon Curtis ended up being a UDFA. And we heard so many positive stories coming out of, you know, the reporters, the people that were watching him. They had a couple of scrimmages. Curtis looked really, really, really good. At one point, he was taking first team reps. Preseason, the Raiders didn't really have him play a ton, right? He only played 11 snaps. So, you know, pull what you can out of those 11 snaps, but he looked good, right? McClendon Curtis has upside. His college tape was really, really, really good. Coming from Chattanooga, obviously ended up not getting drafted. I think there's upside with him, right? And again, when you look at upside, you know, when you look at, you know, Anthony Bradford and Oluwatimi and McClendon Curtis, we'll see a lot of what these guys are in the preseason, right? If you're not sticking out in the preseason, if you're not the best player on the field in the preseason, it's not going to translate when the stars are out there, at the starters and those type of guys. I think McClendon Curtis is a guy to keep an eye on. Now, the interesting thing will be, you know, do you want Curtis at left guard and Oluwatimi at center and Bradford at right guard? That's a pretty inexperienced offense.
Super young. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Indeed. And I keep having thoughts, too, that, you know, we saw the Seahawks do it with Lewis after his rookie year, that maybe when this all shakes out, that, you know, Anthony Bradford played quite a bit of left tackle at LSU. And you hear, we used to hear Pete Carroll talk about this a lot, that there are right side, some guys can play both sides. Not everybody can. Some people are strictly right side. Some people are strictly left side. And that maybe because of his experience at left tackle, we could see a shift there. So maybe the addition from the outside would be left guard, would be right guard versus left guard, which leads some to speculate that Kevin Zeitler could be in the mix coming over from the Ravens, played obviously with, you know, Mike McDonald would have been familiar with him. 34 years of age though, you know, played just about every snap, stayed healthy last year, an old grizzled veteran. What would you think of that move? You think he still has enough in the tank on maybe a 1-year deal to come in and help out with all these young guys around him?
Yeah, I think he's one of the better guards. I know he's older, right? You look at the older age bracket guys, he's up there. He's one of the best, at least in his prime, he's one of the best. He's still a really good guard. If he was one of the guys you ultimately bring in, I think he'd be the starting guard. Of course, you got to make sure the backups are all in place in case he gets hurt. I wouldn't mind putting him right in at right guard and maybe moving Bradford over to left guard, you know, figuring it out in that aspect and really thinking it through in that aspect of, you know, how do you figure out the offensive line? I think having veterans in, when you have all of those young guys, makes the most sense. Cross is in year three. Lucas is in year three. You know, the interior guys right now are basically about to enter year two. That's a lot of inexperience among the offensive line, you know.
The good news is it's cheap, right?
It's cheap. It is cheap. And another thing, though, it's not just that it's cheap. You know, these guys have upside, and some of them are pretty good, right? So it's not just cheap. Some of them are actually fairly good, right? Yeah. I think Lucas is going to still be really, really good. I was watching Charles Cross against I was watching a couple of his games, and I look over to the right side and I see Lucas, you know, just independent hands. He's snatching people, and I'm not even focusing on him. You know, you see the flashes on tape. You know, that happens.
Yeah, even when he came back last year and you knew he was less than 100% when he came off the injury list, like that offensive line, I forget which game it was that he made his debut coming back off the injured list, but you could obviously tell he uplifted the performance of that entire group.
Yeah, I think Lucas is definitely the real deal. I hope I hope that knee injury doesn't impact him long term. I really do hope we're able to see him come back healthy.
There's one way we're going to find out if the Seahawks were to take a tackle in the first round, which is one of the stronger position groups in this draft this year. That would certainly be telling. Let's finish on that. Let's talk about the draft. Still a little over a month away. You know, Seahawk fans want a guard because of everything we just laid out. Right. Guards typically don't go high. They typically don't go in the first round at all. And rarely centers these days too, just that positional versatility. In fact, John Schneider on his show just last week was saying he feels like overall that guards get overdrafted and that they get overpaid. And you could tell there's a little bit of hint of resentment in his voice. He was a little upset that he wasn't able to go play in the free agent guard market. Last year's a good example. Peter Skoronski, the only guard to go in the first round. And when he was drafted at 10, I think.
Right.
I don't even think the Titans knew specifically they were going to play him at guard. I think they did so out of need. He played tackle in college. Yep. And then four guards went in the second round. Well, the Seahawks don't have a second round pick, but the more I look at what they've done this free agent season, the more I think they're going to trade down, especially after the Sam Howell trade. Now they only have one day two pick. If they get into that second round, or let's just say day two, who are a couple of guys that you really like out of this draft class on the interior that you think would be able to help the Seahawks as rookies, like plug and play guys?
Yeah, this class is very, very, very deep. This draft class is probably one of the deepest draft classes that I've analyzed in a number of years. There's just across the board, you know, you don't centers and guards. I would generally not take them in the first round ever. Generally, I would never draft one just because they don't matter a whole lot in terms of the positional value, right? There's only 32 centers that are going to start in the NFL, right? So there's more than enough centers out there. Oftentimes there's guys available that you can just kind of pick up. Now, Jackson Powers-Johnson, obviously, I think is the elite of the elite prospects. Powers-Johnson day one is going to be a top three center in the NFL, right? He's the Quentin Nelson of centers, right? He plays angry. He wants to beat the shit out of you. Like, the guy's insane on tape. I think he's going to be a first-round pick. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes in, like, the top 14 or 15 picks. Mm. Right? I know centers aren't generally valued that high, but, yeah. You know, Quentin Nelson was, what, the sixth overall pick? You know, I think Paris Johnson has that type of ability in him. And I think, you know, it only takes one general manager to say, hey, we want that as our starting center. So we'll see. We'll see what ends up happening. But for the Seahawks, you know, if Paris Johnson is somehow still available, let's say pick 50, and there's a way for the Seahawks to trade up, that could make sense. I don't think that's actually going to happen. There's guys like Graham Barton out of Duke, who I would say is, you know, right after Paris Johnson, he's probably the second best interior offensive lineman. Yeah,
he's a guy I like a lot.
You got guys like Cooper Beebe at Kansas State, who's a really, really, really good guard. He's physical as well, right? Cedric Van Pran, I know he's a center, but some people do think that, hey, you know, coming out, maybe he can play guard for a year or two, and then if you still need a center, you can transition back to center. It just kind of goes on.
Have you had a chance to watch? It's hard to find tape on small school prospects, but have you had a chance to watch any Mason McCormick yet at all at South Dakota State?
Yeah, so I watched Mason McCormick. Physical, man. Very, yeah. Very, very physical.
He looks like an old school. Like, it looks like his shoulder pads are from the 1980s.
Right, right. He plays with that mindset that you want. Yeah. I will say this. You know, we've seen players like Mason McCormick come out of, like, the smaller schools. I think Trevor Penning was an example of a guy that kind of came out. Yeah. You know, he came out, he was nasty. He wanted to beat up on everybody. He hasn't translated as much. Obviously, Penning is a tackle.
Robert Hunt was a smaller school guy. Not as small as South Dakota State, but yeah.
Right. But, you know, we've seen some workout. We've seen some habit.
Yeah.
The ability to put people down, I think, for me, is not valued as high, right? I don't value it as high. But I do like Mason McCormick a lot. Now, the thing will be is I don't think he's going to go in the top two rounds. I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't go into, like, round four or five. And if the Seahawks could get him in one of those rounds, I think that makes a lot of sense.
That'd be ideal.
But there's a lot of really good guards. So, you know, you can just go down the list of all the different guys that are going to be, like, fifth, sixth, or seventh round picks. You know, guys like Brandon Coleman out of TCU has upside, right? Guys like Matt Lee, although Matt Lee's a center from Miami, he has massive upside.
Yeah, I just became familiar with his name today because somebody tweeted out his relative athletic score, and it was like the sixth best testing for it, you know, centers over the last 10 years, like really, really athletic.
Yeah, I think Matt Lee will be a center. I think if a team needs a center, they'll take him. The center class is really deep. There's like seven starting caliber centers in this class. But what that means is Matt Lee is going to be a fourth or fifth round pick.
Yeah.
Kingsley Iguanakin out of Florida is going to kind of go a little bit later, you know. And that doesn't even include the tackles that are probably going to be guards in the NFL. Like Troy Fatanu, he's like 6'3". I don't think he's going to be able to play tackle in the NFL.
Yeah. Yeah, but then he went to the combine and measured with 34.5-inch arms. So,
crazy. I know. Which, you know, so it's going to be interesting. But
that's the guy everybody wants. Yeah, that's the guy everybody wants up here. Not just because he played at UW. Well, probably because he played at UW, because they saw him pancaking guys,
right?
And being physical for the last couple of years, so yeah, right. Maybe he wouldn't have to move very far. But he's not getting to 16 though. I think after the combine he had, I don't think Fautanu's, you know, yeah.
It depends, you know, if some teams value him as a guard.
Yeah,
you know, I think the Titans, for example, you know, they took Peter Skronsky with the 10th pick last year. Peter Skronsky was pretty good last season. But he's a guard at the end of the day, you know, and you really got to think about it. Like, if you can get a guard in the fourth and fifth round and they play just as long as a guard you take in the first round, you know, is it worth it to take that guard?
Right.
That too, you know, you got to keep the cap space into perspective. Damon Lewis was a really, really good guard, but you couldn't pay him because you got these receivers that need to get paid. You guys have these running backs. You guys got two tackles that are going to eventually have to get paid, right? And you're going to pay a tackle before you pay a guard. Right, you just paid Leonard Williams a pretty big contract for 3 years, that's just what it is. Everything's kind of restricted by the salary cap.
Yeah.
So taking a guard, especially the Titans, like, you know, I think the Titans could have done something different. It just doesn't make sense to me for any team to take a guard in the first round unless you think he can play tackle.
Yeah, which is one of the reasons Barton is one of my favorite guys too, because he looks like a sliding inside the left guard would be a natural fit for him, but he's played tackle, you know, and if Lucas wasn't healthy enough and you find another guard that pops, you could move him out there. So I really like some of those guys that have that positional versatility, but they're hard to find. Right. They're hard to find. Everybody wants to specialize these days. And there's so many moving parts who there's so much that we don't know because it's a whole new coaching staff. And you can't just look at what Ryan Grubb has done as a coordinator in his career and say, well, that's his style of lineman, because he adjusts to what he has. He's played inside zone, outside zone, gap power. He's done it all depending on his personnel. So it just makes it a lot harder for us to figure out what they're doing, but that kind of makes it more fun too. So
right. I think the Seahawks should be interesting this year. I personally think the Seahawks have a really, really good roster. I think they've done a good job through the draft. I think they're in a spot where, from a roster perspective, there's not a lot of teams better than the Seahawks. They're in a good spot. They got young players. They got to fix the offensive line this season. Last season, they had a great offensive line, in my opinion. May not have been as healthy as they should have been, but you know, from a individual player perspective, last year was a good offensive line. This year, they're going to have to do a little bit of work, but I have trust that the Seahawks will get it right. They're a well-run organization.
I got one last one for you. This is a bonus question. It might be a curveball because I didn't put it in my notes, but I know you keep an eye on everything, right? One of the big debates here the last 4 or 5 days has been the change at linebacker, right? Last year, Jordan Brooks, Bobby Wagner, right? We let Wagner walk for the second time, just age and performance, the issue there, and money. We let Jordan Brooks walk. Maybe not a scheme fit with the new coach or whatever. Replace him with Jerome Baker and Terrell Dodson. How do you feel about those two taking over for what the Seahawks had at linebacker last year?
Yeah, I like Jerome Baker. I think he's a good football player. When I watched him with the Dolphins, so I was actually going to do a film breakdown on Baker. I started the process. I do this all the time where I'll like watch a guy and say, I'm going to make a video on this guy, and then I just end up not doing it. But when I watch Jerome Baker, I think he has good ability to have success, right? I think he's one of those guys that could definitely be a good football player. And it's interesting because Jordan Brooks, I felt like was getting better and better as well.
Yeah.
He got almost like $9 million with the Dolphins. Is that about what?
Yeah. 8.75, I think max. Yeah.
Yeah. So he got a pretty good contract. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting because the linebacker position, I feel like, has kind of gotten devalued a little bit over the past couple of years. And I also think now you can probably get a linebacker in the draft outside the first and second round, and you'll still find success. We're also seeing safeties converting to linebackers, right? So I think one of the things the Seahawks should do this season is definitely consider drafting a linebacker. I think it's going to be one of the things.
When I'm doing mock drafts, I'm taking two. Right. Because these guys are both on 1 year deals. Right.
Right.
We got to plan for the future.
I do like Jerome Baker a lot, though. Watch his tape. He looks good to me. Obviously, I think the scheme fit aspect of it is also a big thing. But you do got a new, you know, basically brand new defensive system that's going to be coming in this season. Yeah. And I think the system's going to find success. And I also think some coaches just kind of know how to draft certain players. An example would be like Dan Quinn did a great job for the Cowboys drafting, right? They found all these sleeper type players. I think now with the Seahawks, you know, the Ravens did this last year as well, and even years in the past, right? Yeah. When McDonald's was kind of there. I think as he comes to the Seahawks, he's going to do the same thing. I think the Seahawks are going to end up finding guys in like the fifth and sixth round. They're going to end up starting and producing.
Patrick Queen was a bust until Mike McDonald got his hands on him. So
Exactly.
And one final note, if we're talking about Seahawks linebackers, we can't forget about a certain kid who you and I did a video. I had you on my show to talk about him a year ago. And to this date is still my most viewed video of all time with almost 30,000 views. We can't forget about Drake Thomas. Right.
All right. I'm assuming he didn't play much last year.
He's the sleeper in this whole thing. No, he was active for a couple of games and then he banged up his knee. Got an opportunity. Okay. Yeah. We never heard how severe the knee injury was, but I don't think it was ACL. I think it was pretty minor.
Yeah, I totally forgot about him, man. Yeah. But he's definitely an interesting wild card in there as well.
Yeah, a little undersized, but a guy likes to hit. So
Right.
All right, man. It's so good to have you on. I appreciate all the work that you do. His YouTube channel, The Football Scout. Check it out. What are some things that you're currently working on that viewers can look forward to seeing soon?
Yes, I actually started a scouting for a small college. So I've been really busy with that. I'm trying to make it more of, I want to try to officially get into the scouting side a little bit.
Good for you, man. Breaking news.
Right. So that's been kind of fun. But it has been a little bit harder with the NFL draft process, right? I'm not as invested in that. And I got a lot of work to do on this side. But I'll still be covering the draft and those type of things. I'll still be covering the Seahawks, O-line, D-line, just kind of getting into it, cover a couple other teams. I'm excited, man. There's a lot of change for me personally. I know I had told you this, that I moved recently.
Yeah.
I moved like 2.5 hours from where I used to live to where I live now. So just a lot of changes, man. I'm just excited for everything. So
what's the name of the college?
It's a small school in Wisconsin. Very, very small school.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, next time I have you on the show, I'll introduce you as College Scout Sanjit T.
Absolutely. Right? Man, I appreciate that.
All right, man. Thanks for taking the time. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Pretty cool news there that he is actually doing some college scouting now for a small school in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Love the work that Sanjit does. Love the time that he takes to break things down on the show. How do you feel now about the potential of the offensive line? Thank you for watching. If you're still watching, for lasting until the end of the video. I usually do this earlier in the video. But please hit that like button, subscribe to the YouTube channel, hit the bell button for notification of new episodes. If you prefer audio episodes, you can subscribe on Spotify for less than $1 a month and get ad-free episodes. Or if you like any of the other platforms, just be sure to subscribe so that you always stay up and you know when the latest episodes are coming out. And if you really like what I do, leave a 5-star review, especially on Apple Podcasts. Really appreciate that as well. Or you can buy me a beer or a coffee. All those links will be in the description. Got Jackson Bevins of Cigar Thoughts joining me tomorrow. That's always a good time. Until then, forever and always, go Hawks.